there, I'm Mark Scarborough, and this is the podcast Walking with Tate, a podcast that is walking out of the first of the main terraces of Purgatory and on to the second. Believe it or not, we're at Canto 12, lines 100 through 117. I know, first to the second, and yet only at Canto 12. Just think that through for a minute. We've come through a long experience on the steps, terraces, ledges, pathways, shores, all the way down below the gate of Purgatory itself. We have now rounded the first terrace of Pride, and we have spent endless time talking about art, and we are on our way out now and headed toward the second terrace. If none of that makes sense, there are many, many episodes of this podcast behind us. You might want to go all the way back to Inferno and pick us up and join us eventually on the climb up Mount Purgatory. But we are going to be at Purgatorio Canto 12, lines 100 through 117. This is my English language translation. You can find it on my website, markscarborough.com or walkingwithdante.com. You can print it off, you can make your own comments, or you can continue the conversation with me there, which would be fantastic. This is a little bit of a difficult passage. It involves a very difficult simile. We'll have to talk it through quite a bit. And it also involves our entrance, near entrance to the second terrace of Purgatory itself. So let's get to it. Just as going on the right-hand side and climbing up the mountain where the church is situated over the Rubaconte and oversees that ever so well-governed place, that very steep ascent is cut into the slope with stairs that were made at a time when all sorts of measurements and figurations could be trusted. So the bank here, which fell steeply away from the higher circle up above, was actually made less steep, except that now and again a towering rock leaned close by. While our very persons were headed in that direction, a voice was singing Beati Popere Spiritu in tones that mere speech couldn't utter. Ah, how different these entrances from those in hell. Here, one's entrance is met with singing. Down there, it's met with ferocious laments. As we make our way to the second terrace of Purgatory, we are called back to the fumes of Inferno. Let's talk about this very difficult simile about the Rubaconte and the church and what all this has to do with the poem that we're reading. Then let's talk about that bit of Latin, Beati Popere Spiritu. And finally, let's turn back and talk about what else but hell itself. It begins with this big simile. And if you remember, we just left the angel behind. He just brushed his wing against Dante's forehead. He was all in white. He looked like the morning star, or at least the twinkling of the morning star in his face. We had little references to Lucifer, which leads then eventually to this reference to hell. It's all leading right here. Remember all those references to Lucifer, the morning star, in the last episode of the podcast, and to falling like Lucifer did, and yet here we are with a reference to hell. Yep, we got here, and it was building to this, but first we got to get through this simile. So here it goes. Just as going on the right-hand side and climbing up the mountain where the church is situated over the Rubaconte and oversees that ever so well-governed place. Let's just stop there, the first three lines. So what are we talking about here? This is a stairway that goes from Porta San Miniato in Florence up to the church of San Miniato al Monte, the church that's sitting up there at a very high point. I said it's the stairway that goes. I should have said it's the stairway that used to go. This is no longer in existence, this stairway to get up to the church of San Miniato al Monte. It's an interesting little bit here because it involves San Miniato, Saint Miniato or Saint Minius, and we want to talk through that for just a second. The Rubaconte, before we get there, let's just say, the Rubaconte is a bridge over the Arno it's now called the Ponte alle Grazie. But at the time, it was named after the man who helped build it in 1237, a podesta, or again, we might say mayor of Florence, Rubaconte da Mandello da Milano. He commissioned and helped build this bridge, and so it was in the day named after him, the Rubaconte Bridge, now with a different name. But let's talk about San Miniato, since he's lying underneath not only the church, San Miniato al Monte, but underneath this passage. San Miniato, or Minius, was an Armenian warlord. As he became embroiled in various war campaigns, he eventually found Christianity and became a hermit during the Christian persecutions by the Roman Empire. So during the days of the persecutions, Minius, or Saint Miniato, is actually one of the prime martyrs from the Roman epic. He becomes this hermit here, in fact, outside of Florence, and an emperor gets wind of this, that there's this former Armenian warlord and battle sergeant who has turned a hermit and is living in this place, and the emperor has him beheaded across the Arno over on the other side. He then picks up his head after the beheading, as saints will do. He picks up his head, he crosses the Arno, he climbs back up to this hermitage holding his head, and thus the church is founded here. I think that we should just think here for a minute about governmental overreach, about the way that the government persecutes true believers here at the climb. And we should think about this lying underneath this simile, because San Miniato al Monte is said to oversee, to look over that well-governed place. And I translated it as ever so well-governed place, so you would hear the bitter irony. That's Florence. Dante is making a very crass and very bitter jab at Florence. The church overlooks that place, just known for its justice. Florence, the place that has sent me into exile. It goes on. The very steep ascent is cut into the slope with stairs that were made at a time when all sorts of measurements and figurations could be trusted. You should know that this is a reference to Florentine corruption. Singleton has a lot to say about this, and many of the previous scholars from many centuries before add to this story. Essentially, papers were burned, contracts were burned by various Florentine political leaders in order to fudge records and claim things that they couldn't claim. And Dante's probably making a reference to all of that Florentine corruption. So what he's saying is these stairs were made long before you could lose trust in any kind of tables or measurements that any Florentine would do. It's, again, part of the bitterness of the passage. And it goes on then to fulfill itself as a simile to say, so the bank here, which fell steeply away from the higher circle up above, was actually made less steep, except that now and again a towering rock leaned close by. So there is a little bit of safety issue here. Remember, the angel assured the pilgrim that it was safe to go on up, but the rocks are really close here. The question is, what does all that bitter irony about Florentine corruption have to do with purgatory? Well, that's what makes this simile so difficult. So let's just talk out its difficulty for a moment. Let me read it one more time, just so you hear it. Just as going on the right-hand side and climbing up the mountain where the church is situated over the Rubaconte and oversees that ever-so-well-governed place, that very steep ascent is cut into the slope with stairs that were made at a time when all sorts of measurements and figurations could be trusted, so the bank here, which fell steeply away from the higher circle up above, was actually made less steep, except that now and again a towering rock leaned close by. Okay, what makes this so difficult? One, it expresses a rage at Florence, and the rage at Florence is a little bit discontiguous or maybe dissonant with the overall tenor of Purgatorio. And in fact, that rage at Florence, ever so well governed place, and you used to be able to trust all the measurements in Florence, that bitterness is contrasted to that Latin Beati Populi Spiritu and the beautiful song that escapes mere human words that ends this passage. So the bitterness is a little bit discordant inside of this thing, it's hard to get your head quite around the emotional landscape of the simile. That's the first difficulty. The second difficulty is that the simile is meant to illuminate the allegory of the climb. The climb is overseen by a church, just as these stairs from Florence lead up to the Church of San Miniato al Monte. By the way, if you ever get there, do get there, because there is this gorgeous mosaic in the church of Jesus and the Virgin and Saint Miniato or Saint Minius. It's this gorgeous mosaic that was made in 1207. Just a little hint left of the Byzantine style in that mosaic. It's so very beautiful. But again, we're supposed to see this as allegorical. That is, the soul's climb to its perfection here is getting easier and easier, but it still is tight, and it still gets close-fitting, because remember, broad is the road to damnation, according to Jesus, but narrow is the way to salvation. So it is a little tight and difficult, and we're supposed to see that allegory here, which is another reason that rage and bitterness is a little strange. Or is it? This is absolutely a possible solution. Is it that even if you are ascending to your perfection, you are still allowed to be absolutely furious at injustice? Is that part of it? The climb to perfection doesn't, take away your ability to be angry at injustice in the world? If so, it's still a difficult emotional landscape. And also, furthermore, the simile offers the emotional landscape, to put it in simple words, of safe turbulence. There's all kinds of bitterness and rage in it. The rocks are pressing close, and yet we've been assured it's safe. And we're even told here it's less steep because the stairway is so well made. The craftsman has done such a good job that getting up to the next terrace would be really hard. But somebody's designed this so well that we can do it. And we have to say there may be a meta comment here, a meta artistic comment from our poet. That is, if I make this climb well, if I craft the poetry here well, you'll be able to get from the first terrace to the second terrace. That's probably also going on here and complicating this simile. And finally, of course, the simile is just moving the narrative forward. It's moving the story on to its next location, the second terrace of Purgatory proper. The plot is moving inside the simile. The climb is happening inside this poetic iteration. We see them climbing even as we are in the middle of high poetic talk. This all makes this nine-line simile incredibly complicated to get through and incredibly complicated to unpack. It's tight. The lines are tight. If you look at it in the medieval Florentine, it's really compressed and tight. I've even blown it out a bit and expanded it to give it a little air because the tightness of it makes it border on incomprehensible at times. It's not incomprehensible in the medieval Florentine. It's just tough. The whole thing lies there as tough while we're being told that the climb is easy. So is that part of the irony that's going on here? Probably, thus further complicating this complicated simile. They're climbing in a metaphor. And as they're going up, there's this bit about while our very persons were headed in that direction. And the word used at persone is often used as bodies. But it's weird. It's plural. And Virgil can't be in a body. So it must mean personal iteration in some way. Or has Dante nodded off and forgotten that Virgil's not in his body? I don't think so. But there's a way in which, if you remember in the last episode of this podcast, the last passage, we talked about how the body and the spirit were kind of divided and Dante's spirit was head down, but Virgil was telling him to straighten up his body and straighten up his face. Remember that whole bit? Well, I think that it comes together, body and spirit, here, that both climb on up. Our very persons were headed in that direction, and a voice was singing, Beati Popere Spiritu, in Latin, blessed are the poor in spirit. This is the first of the Beatitudes spoken by Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount at the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 5, verse 3. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God. So now we know that the terrace of pride ends with the first of the Beatitudes, which emphasizes humility. Blessed are the poor in spirit. This comes from a place in tones where mere speech couldn't even utter it. It's sung beautifully in a way in that you couldn't even do it even in the Latin. The big question here is whose voice is singing it? Most Dante scholars say it's the angels, and elsewhere there's some confirmation for that for angels ahead of us, but it's interesting that it's not labeled the angel. Is this because they don't look back, because this climb is indeed steep, even if it's easier because of the way it's crafted? So they don't look back, so they just hear it, but the rocks are pressing close, so they can't really see it's an angel? If so, that's a really great moment of verisimilitude, of reality from Dante. That is, the passage is so close, I can't even tell whether it's the angel singing. All I know is that there's a voice offering the first beatitude, and then it comes out to the kicker of all kickers in the last tercet. How different these entrances from those in hell. Here, one's entrance is met with singing. Down there, it's met with ferocious laments. And this little bit of hell is so intriguing that we pass off the Terrace of Pride and our last glimpse, this is it. We're just about to step onto the second Terrace of Purgatory. Our last glimpse is of hell. Is this because all of hell is ultimately bound up with pride? That certainly would be the way we would look at it in Thomistic theology, in classical Catholic theology. We'd certainly say that all sin is rooted in pride, and Lucifer's fall is the hallmark of that. It is pride, and so it is the root of sin. Is that why we look back at hell? Are we still trailing a little sulfur with us here? I mean, we're not really quite able to shake off hell yet. Is that why Lucifer is appearing, not only in the robe that relieves, but implicitly in the angel's face as the morning star and the question of humans falling? Is that what's going on here? Is Dante himself unable to shake off hell? Is it still sitting there? Is Inferno sitting not with the pilgrim, but is it still sitting with the poet, the monumental task? And so we kind of have to have all these callbacks to hell. It's just intriguing that our last glimpse of the Terrace of Pride is hell. My take is that Dante the poet is still working out purgatory. And the question is it dangerous? Remember, the angel promises it's safe. Is it dangerous the way hell was dangerous? Are there dangers here? No, but if not, then what is there? And Dante's working that out. And he's also working out how this is not punishment in the way that hell is punishment, but it looks the same. You know, we could have had a circle of hell where people were crawling around under giant boulders. That's not hard to imagine. So it looks like hell. I think this is an indicator that the poet is working this out and figuring out that I am in a different space. And the space of Inferno was overwhelming. So figuring out this space is difficult because we're transitioning to a completely redeemed space in Paradiso. And that transition at times gets a little awkward in Purgatorio. It's one of the things that makes Purgatorio so human. It keeps getting back to hell, to making references back there. As if we can't quite shake that. We have to think that there's something in the poet that can't quite shake it, and some way that the poet is trying to escape it into a different kind of poetry. And is Dante himself worried about lamenting? This is the Terrace of Pride of art, of what artistic creation does, of Cimabue passing away and Giotto taking his place. Is there a way that Dante himself is feeling a little pressure inside the poem? Maybe. And thus the laments of hell come up. Because is there a way that Dante himself feels this kind of lament as artistic fame passes away? All of that is sitting here, fascinatingly unanswered, but still sitting here, lying under this text as we exit finally this Terrace of Pride onto the next Terrace of Purgatory. We've got a little bit of this canto left to go, so one more episode before we actually get to Canto 13 and the second Terrace of Purgatory itself. But before we do that, let's read these lines again, lines 100 through 117 of Purgatorio, Canto 12. Just as going on the right-hand side and climbing up the mountain where the church is situated over the Rubaconte and oversees that ever-so-well-governed place, that very steep ascent is caught into the slope with stairs that were made at a time when all sorts of measurements and figurations could be trusted. So the bank here, which fell steeply away from the higher circle up above, was actually made less steep, except that now and again a towering rock leaned close by. While our very persons were headed in that direction, a voice was singing Beati Popera Spiritu in tones that mere speech couldn't utter. Oh, how different these entrances from those in hell. Here, one's interest is met with singing. Down there, it's met with ferocious laments. Thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast, Walking with Dante. Thanks for being on the journey with me. As I always say, if you could rate it, if you could like it, if you could write a review, that would be terrific. You know I'm going to keep walking. I am so thrilled to be walking. Despite my current health situation, I cannot tell you how exciting it is for me to be walking and that I'm still able to do this. Hey, I'm going on. So far, nothing has stopped me. Let's just hope that nothing stops me in the future, because then you may hear the laments of hell. But until then, we're going on and listening to how the poor in spirit are indeed blessed. Join me on the walk ahead. I'm Mark Scarborough. I'll see you then.